Are you working on your author career but struggling to get that first book published? Does the goal of being an author seem too lofty? Or are thoughts of having multiple books and making a full-time living are as fantastical as living in Cinderella's castle? Welcome to Discovered Wordsmiths, a podcast where aspiring authors can be heard. Join Stephen Schneider as he finds and talks to authors you may not know, but authors that have gotten their foot on the author career path. Hear what they've done to get there and where they want to go now. Settle back. It's time for a bit of inspiration and advice. Come listen to today's Discovered Wordsmith.
So today, Discovered Wordsmiths, I've got Jim Irving with me, and I'm very excited about this because Jim is the first person I've interviewed for the second time. It's been about a year since we talked, yes. And it sounds like a whole lot has happened with you. So real briefly, you were living in Ireland, if I remember right, and now you're in Spain. So tell us, what's going on with you a little bit there, Jim?
I'm one of those lucky people that's got to a certain age. We live in Northern Ireland, right in the middle of some beautiful countryside. 6 years ago, we decided we wanted to have a bolt hole, somewhere to go that would be easy to get to. We're not that far from an airport, so we chose Spain.
So just in case some Russian mafia is coming after you or something, right?
Yeah, which is very likely. Yeah, so you're reading the wrong books. So we've got a place here. We've had it for 5 years. But, of course, with COVID, we hadn't seen the inside of it for over a year. So it was locked up. So we got here 2 days ago. There was a lot of dust. But now we're back and functioning and touch wood, the technology seems to be working. So we just move back and forward between the two, and I work between the two as well.
Nice. Good. So I'm not as lucky to have two houses, and especially not lucky to have houses between different countries. What's that like, going between different cultures and, you know, just changing your life like that every now and then?
Well, here I have to get slightly political, of course, because two things have happened. First of all, we would move location every 6 or 8 weeks. Flights were low cost, walk on, walk off, apart from security, of course, and it was really easy. And then, of course, two things hit the United Kingdom. One was COVID, so now I have to have proof of vaccination at both ends. I have to have tests done at both ends, so that's much more complex. And the other thing is Brexit. So we're no longer part of the EU. So I actually have to line up, get a passport stamped, do all of the things you do when you're going to another country, which we haven't done for pretty well all of my adult life. So there are two levels of inconvenience, but still it's a 2.5 hour flight. That takes 15 minutes at this end and now we're here. So it's good.
Nice. And do you get writing done in both places?
Yes. In fact, my first book was mostly written here in Spain. My business was quiet and I was able to just focus away from my home address on just the writing. So this is where I did most of it. And to be honest, Spain and Northern Ireland are very different. Cold, hot, different cultures, different societies. But do you know what? The technology is the same. The environment for writing is the same. As long as you've got a quiet room and some thoughts in your head, you can go for it. And so, yeah, I had some technology glitches in the past, but now, generally, things are pretty stable, and I just work away in whichever. Most of my clients for my business, for the last 18 months, I've been working with on Zoom. So it makes not the slightest difference to them which room or which country I'm sitting in. We just carry on. I've had 3 customer meetings today.
That's great. And I love that because not only am I a big proponent of writers and authors and that, but the entrepreneur lifestyle and the mobile entrepreneur lifestyle. I've got a talk I'm working on for middle school parents with middle school kids about the future of work, how things are going to change. These kids in fifth, sixth grade can't really look forward to a cashier job at Walmart or McDonald's or something. They're not, they're going away.
That's right. And they absolutely are. And You know, I wouldn't like to be in the business of selling city center office space at the moment.
Right.
Because everyone that I know has either said we're not going back to it or we'll go back to it a couple of days a week. I think the demand for that is probably gone for a generation at least.
At least, yeah. And I also show in the talks, like, you don't have to earn as much if you don't have to live in a big city where your job is. Yes. You know, if a house in the city costs $500,000 on, you know, 2 feet of land, you can go to some place like where I live, that a house that's twice as big with three times as much land costs like $100,000. You know, so you don't have to earn as much.
That's right. Yeah. It's been a very interesting dynamic working through this as someone who's already mobile and gradually seeing companies step away from the office, coming together on Zoom or other options are available, but working away and realizing actually it does work and you can do it. Now, obviously, some things require a building, an office, a factory. Of course, they'll never change. But a lot has changed, I believe. And I believe in my world, in the world of sales, the what is it you call them in the US? Is it the foot soldiers, the people who, or you know, who just are, or road warriors? That's it. Sorry,
road warriors. Yeah,
not foot soldiers. Well, maybe that applies too.
But
the road warriors, I don't see corporate finance departments allowing people a car and head out and do your thing. I think it's going to be only if a transaction is above a certain value, only if it's a certain situation or it's strategic, do you go out and travel and physically meet.
And I was at a conference over the weekend and there were some people from a show that I enjoy watching. And the first two seasons was in the studio. They evaluate videos. But the first two seasons, everybody got flown. They were in the studio, makeup, hair, and all that. And then COVID hit. And now they're all sitting at home in their living rooms with iPhones. And so it's a national TV show recorded on iPhones.
Yes.
So you deal with sales and business. So, yeah, you're right. This is totally changing perspective. We've had that because we've done it, but many company people, it's always been this way. That's how we're going to do it. And suddenly they're finding, hey, we don't have to do it that way. It's really changing.
Yes. And it's the last 2 years have been the dictionary definition of disruptive change.
Yeah.
You know, this is it. You ain't working the way you used to, full stop.
This is essentially like the hurricane for the whaling ship.
Well, hopefully it has a bit of a better outcome ultimately.
Right, yes. You hope so.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
We're chatting a bit today. Your first book that we talked about was the B2B Selling Guidebook. So how have things, before we talk about your second book, how have things been going with that book in the last year?
That book
year?
Has gone well. Sales have been good, but I got an enormous shock. When was it? About 6 months ago now. Another author emailed me and said, did you know you've won an award? And I said, tell me more. What are you talking about? And the bottom line was that Book Authority, based in New York, had named my first book one of the world's best books for sales for 2021.
Nice.
So, yeah, I didn't even know. I don't know how I got on the list. I don't know. Anyway, I'm very happy. So the book has done well in its own right. If you look on Amazon, I've only got 5-star reviews and I've got a good number of them and it's now won this award. So, so that's been, you know, for a first attempt with no support, sitting in a room in Northern Ireland or Spain and writing what I thought, I'm really pleased because when you start on this thing, as you know, you just don't know if it's going to work, if one person is going to buy it or not, if it's going to have any interest.
Right.
So that was the first thing. So that's the sort of the overall summary. The second thing has been even more interesting for me as an individual. I did it on my own with no thought for anybody else and thought that was the way it happened. Now, I can't speak for science fiction, romance, or any other genre. But in the sales world, I have reached out to and other authors have reached out to me. And there's a global community of the authors who are teaching professionalism, teaching ethics, all of that sort of thing. And we meet and chat and share comments. And that's led to my third book, which is still not finished. But But yeah, I found a community of people who live in my world who aren't competitive and, oh, I'll keep mine to myself and, you know, you can have yours. They're very open and friendly, and that's been fantastic. So that was a wonderful surprise at the end of the process.
Wow. Congrats on the award. I mean, that's fantastic. You said it's selling well, doing well. That's what the other thing I love about indie, because a lot of traditionally published, from what I hear, they basically, if they do anything, they do a big push at the beginning and then, well, it hasn't sold or it's not selling enough and it's gone. But yours is growing over time.
Yes, that's right. And it has been growing. I mean, it didn't start high. Although, to be fair, for the second week after launch, I was number 7 or 8 in the world, so in this category, so technically a bestseller.
Nice.
But it's not always been at that level. But every month I get money, every month something comes in, every month people are taking it. And it's been interesting. I don't know what it's like in other book markets, but in my book market, I went for all three: physical copy of the book, audiobook, and Kindle and the others. And I would say the biggest seller is the physical book. Number two is audiobook. And number three is ebook.
Interesting.
Which wasn't what I expected.
Which actually, talking to others, from what I've heard and seen, nonfiction does much, much better physical than ebook, whereas fiction it does much better ebook. But they're both climbing for audiobook. And a lot of people with COVID are discovering some of these nonfiction books. They enjoy listening to them while they're running, walking the dogs, out driving, and they're getting a lot more information out of it rather than buying a physical book and putting it on the shelf and not touching it. So that's great.
Yeah, yeah. Now, my antidote to the physical book problem, as you've seen it, is that the physical book is designed for salespeople. It's very short, each chapter. So it's designed for pick up, 10 minutes, put down. But the end of the chapter has a lined page for notes. And I've had no end of comments of people saying, fantastic, read the chapter, write down 5 or 6 things that I want to do. Next day, read the next chapter. So that worked out quite well. And that was just a random idea in terms of structure that I put into it. But it's worked okay.
This leads me to a question. You live in Ireland, now Spain, back and forth a bit. You won an award in America. So do you sell your book all over, and do you use anything other than Amazon?
Yes, well, I used one of the book publishing aggregators. So I worked with them. The one I've got is based in the UK and the US, and they do physical books and ebooks. So they take care of all the admin. It's only printed in a physical book by Amazon, but it is printed worldwide. But the ebook is Apple, basically any form of tablet. There's a compatible version. So it's gone into the shop fronts in Apple, Amazon, Google, Barnes & Noble, all of those sorts of people. My experience personally is that something like 80% of the sales are coming out of Amazon now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's important information, because you're a professional award-winning writer, and that's what others want to hear from is someone like you. Let's talk a bit about your new book. You've got a second book out. How long has this been out? And tell us about it, what it's called, what it's about.
The second book has been out about 10 months now. The first book was for professional salespeople. It was about selling, understanding the fundamentals of selling, and then the art and the science of selling professionally and ethically. So that was the first book. When I sat down and thought I might write a second book, I realized that I'd covered half of my career, because half was doing and half was leading. So the second book is called The B2B Leader's Guidebook, and it's for anyone who is either running a small business, running a division of a corporate, or running sales teams in any of those environments. So it's particularly aimed at entrepreneurs and small business, where suddenly you're not just a business owner, but you're running your sales in the first couple of years, and then you hire someone and you're now a sales leader. You know, if you're going to do that in accountancy or you're going to do that in law, boy, do you get training. In the world of small business and sales, just do it. That's where it's come from. So the second book, the B2B Leader's Guidebook, is really all about helping those who are in that situation, whether they've been in it for years or whether they're new. And the structure is the same, very short chapters, but this one builds on the first eight chapters are on starting. How to start, what approach to take, what's the right thing to do. The second is on building, that whole thing about creating a team and everything around that. And then the last section of about eight chapters is on improving. And so for anyone who's running a high-performance team, sales is about 25% of it. The rest of it is about people management, discipline, structure, process, setting priorities, just all of that stuff about leading.
Yeah. And you've had, this is from your experience through years of doing this. And obviously, if it's the same style, same structure, your first book, it's award-winning. You've been selling it quite well for over a year. Now you've got a second book. So I can see people in the sales starting with the first, moving up in the world and having the second one.
Yes.
Or the leaders having both.
That's my hope. It's not sold quite so many. There's a smaller group of people who lead rather than do. Again, I've got nothing but five-star reviews so far, so I'm really pleased. And a couple of people, one of the big bloggers in the UK in this space said some phrase like, the only book you need if you want to be a leader in sales or something like that. So I've had some nice comments and I'm very pleased with that.
Yeah.
And as I said, I've now started into the third, but the third isn't here yet. So the second has just been a follow-on in the same style with exactly the same structure, but the contents are those for those who are leading or about to lead high-performance teams.
Nice. So your business, you've got clients, you work with clients, you've done that for years. Have any of them read the book after working with you and given feedback? And is there any other interesting ways you've gotten the word out or you've talked to people getting the book into people's hands?
Right. Okay. So the answer to the first question is yes. I've had some people who have thought about engaging with me, have gone and bought the book to see if I'm okay to engage with, and then engaged. So in that sense, even if I wasn't making any money on the book, it's actually brought me business for my one-man company.
Because you're an expert. You have a book, they like the book, and they know, this guy knows what he's talking about.
The second thing, yes, that's happened. People have started the training, and then sitting at home in the evening have just clicked on and gone, yes, I'll have this. So I have a number of people. And the thing that makes me smile so often is that I've had people say, you know, I'm doing session number four with them. And one says, before we start, it's you on the audiobook. And I laugh and go, yeah, you must have bought it then. Yeah. So people are having it as we drive or drive to meet people or whatever. And they're having it. So that's been a nice experience. The other thing that I've done, just because I don't think social media per se is the place for a business leader's book sale. Now, I may be completely wrong. Funnily enough, I have just engaged a specialist in social media to look at that side for me. But what I have done is I've been very, very active. I'm in the top 2% on LinkedIn. So blogs, giving content, giving value, helping people, who then, of course, say, who is this guy, click, and end up on the website. Yeah.
I think that's important to point out for others listening, other authors. You write a nonfiction book, you write it for sales people, sales leaders. That's not the group that's going to have a fun place on Facebook and get there to chat. They're there for business, they're there for work. So LinkedIn is the social media that fits with what you do and the book. Yes. And I think that's important because I think a lot of authors, there's groups on Facebook and they're, you know, they push sales and this, that, and the other thing. And I think authors get internally like, oh my God, I've got to be on Facebook. And I've been hearing more and more authors say, no, I'm not on Facebook. I do other things. So you found what works for you.
Yeah. And I just had that as a gut feel. I spoke to everyone that I know that uses Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, and nobody was using those for business. And I've got a sort of broad range of friends in and out of business, and it's for communication and family and friends and chat. And I thought, I'm not going to put advertising money or effort into that medium because I don't see anything coming back out of it.
So do you do anything else, like give talks at seminars or conferences or anything like that?
I've done quite a number of this with sales leaders, the big US authors. So there's a guy who's very near the top worldwide called Andy Paul, and he runs a sales podcast. It's in the multiple millions of downloads. So I've appeared on his podcast, and he's asked me to come back again at the end of the year when the third book comes out. So I've done that in terms of getting out to audiences. And because of this community thing, when the second book came out, a number of people who are more established names said, oh, Jim's new book's out, and sent that out to their followers. Nice. So that sort of informal activity has been quite good for me. But I've not done book tours or planned campaigns or anything like that. It's been organic through people and through their networks. Yeah.
What about just your business expertise? Are there any conferences or anything for business that you've gone to and talked on the subject of sales or leadership?
No, for two reasons. One, all of this happened as COVID was bubbling and then erupting. Right. Now, a couple of my friends in these conversations who are also authors have done virtual conferences, and I think the feedback has been it's okay, but it's not fantastic. Because right. those things, it's all about meeting someone in the corridor and saying, oh, are you the guy, that, you know, and all of that stuff. And, of course, that doesn't happen in the virtual world, certainly not to the same extent.
Right.
So my feeling is that I wanted to leave that until the world had normalized.
And you've mentioned a couple times a third book coming. Give us a little brief about that.
Okay. Well, this is the really interesting one, and this is a pure case of happenstance or timing or whatever you want to call it. So, I decided I want to submit to write a third book. Now, the first two were both done within a year of each other, and you know what that's like for an author. My wife has got the fastest wit of anybody I've ever met, and I said to her, you know what, honey, I think I'm going to write a third book. And before I could finish the sentence, she said, I've got the title. And I said, oh, what is it? And she said, the B2B Divorce Guidebook. So
that's good.
Yes, I did. That was so cute. That's going in the foreword of the book. Yeah, I've been given permission for this, my third and what will be my last book. So I started to write it going back to salespeople. A lot of people said they wanted practical tips to help them in their day-to-day life, which was the theme of the first book. So I started to write that, and it wasn't a writer's block. It was just coming along quite slowly. Separately on LinkedIn, as I'd done before, I ran a competition. And I said to people, tell me the one thing you've learned that's the most important thing you've learned in your career in sales. I was inundated with answers. And so I couldn't separate two winners, and I named two winners and sent their prizes off. And I messaged both of them and said, hey, would you fancy taking what you wrote as an answer on LinkedIn, expanding it, and making it a guest chapter in my book? Both answers came back instantaneously. And at that point, the little bulb in my head went on. So what I did was I then consciously reached out. It's going to be a 35-chapter book. I've written another 10 chapters of new content, and 25 people from around the world, Holland, Canada, UK, US, Australia, have contributed a chapter where what they believe and I believe run consistently. And these people have been junior salespeople, people who've retired, people who are starting as coaches, and the biggest selling business author in the UK, one of the biggest sales authors in the US, a real mixture of people all talking about their favorite thing and their most important learning. So this one, I've not finalized it yet, but it's going to be something like the B2B Selling Tips guidebook. And that should be out around about November. In fact, in Spain here, I'm going to finish my last two chapters. And there are about four or five of the guests who have agreed to do it still to send their content in. And then it's that long task of assembling what's the order going to be? Is everything consistently laid out, etc.? So there'll be 2 or 3 weeks hard work in there. And then when that's done, off to the publishing process and out it'll come. But that's very different. Nice. So 1/3 of it is me, 2/3 are other people. And some of the lessons, you know, there are people in there who were that salesperson who boasted and shouted and did all the things and then had a coming to their senses and says, don't ever do that, do this. I've got people who are talking about resilience. And then people who are talking about, here's something that I've done to prove that I'm more professional than others. And it's just going to be a complete book full of individuals' most powerful tips in the world of sales. So this will be a pure sales book, no other content, but I'm really quite hopeful. And all of those people have been really gracious and helpful. We've worked together on each of those 25 chapters. They, of course, will be launching it out to their communities and their friends and everything else. So it's been a really interesting experience. I would say it's been as hard work as writing myself, because it's sort of a herding cat scenario. You know, you've got 25 yeah. individuals all with their own lives, all doing their own thing, all trying to come together. But so I've typed far less, but I've spoken and done email much more. It's been a collaboration. So it's been really interesting. And as I say, sometime in November, towards the end, probably that should be coming out. And I'm excited about this as a third one.
It's interesting because I kind of had a similar idea with the podcast. I've talked to so many authors and learned so many things that I'm going back through some of the early episodes, first time authors, and taking some of the things they've said and putting it into a book, you know, with similar.
That's a great idea, because I would have crawled on broken glass to find that when I was writing the first book.
Right. Here's a year and a half's worth of tips from new authors for new authors.
Yeah. That's a really strong idea. And that's the author's equivalent of what I'm doing on sales.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And I would love to talk to you again in a year or so after this book's out and been selling, to see how your sales on the first two books get affected. And I think that's beneficial for others too.
Yes. As an author, I would hope that with the visibility of all these other networks, and this is great because for those who've been in my world and who've retired, it's a way to give something back. They're not wanting anything. They just want to say, don't ever do this, do that, etc. For those who are up and coming, it's an interesting way to become visible. For those who are established big name players, their content is going out to all of those other communities. So it really is, you know, in the literal sense, it's a win-win-win. The person reading it is going to get more content from more sources than they would get in a traditional book. The authors are getting visibility. And hopefully, I will see that both sell well, but also impact the first two books. I think you're very astute in that comment. I'm hoping that there will be quite an impact on the first two.
I agree. I hope we'll find out. That'd be great. Actual live data and information from somebody that's lived through it.
Yes.
Great. All right. Well, Jim, it's been really great catching up. Do you have any last minute about your books or advice or anything for the people listening?
So for authors, well, I think the first thing is don't give up. And a world opens out to you. And all I can do is speak from my own experience. But I've got this marvelous world at the end of my career where I've got new friends in Canada, Australia, Holland, the UK, America, who I'd never met before. We're all doing the same thing. We're all working in different geographies and we all share and help and comment. And so I would be surprised if there wasn't something like that in other book writing circles. So that was a real shock to me as someone who, how wrong a way to do it, by the way, as someone who took no advice and sat down with a blank sheet of paper and ended up writing. Do you know what? it's worked out quite well. But that's been the big surprise for me. There are communities out there who are positive communities who will help and advise. And you're part of that because you're doing authors. Yeah. So I found one in my world, but you're doing it generically for authors, which I think is a great thing to do.
Yeah, thank you. That's my goal. Hopefully, there's some authors that have been inspired and are helped by listening to other similar authors.
Yeah, sure. Yes.
Well, Jim,
I've loved the conversation again. It's been great.
Yeah, it has. It looks like it's pretty sunny there. I'm just seeing some reflected light behind you. But
I've got blinds closed because it's too bright. But there's a lot of sunlight out there. And not to make anybody jealous, but I'm going to go and do one of the things that Spain is famous for. When I'm finished this, I'm going to put my swimming trunks on and wander the 100 yards to the beach and swim in the warm sea, which is...
Bam, that is my point on the future of our work world. You can live in Spain, go swimming. For me, it's 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
I can go swimming for a while and come back and continue to work because of our world the way it is now.
Yes,
love
absolutely.
That.
That would not have been possible at the start of my career. You had to be in the office. You had to sit on the office phone. You had to make calls. You had to do all of those things. Today, my goodness, is that changing.
Right. Hey, real quick, before you go, we were chatting a bit off camera before this started. So part of your experience is Silicon Graphics, and you have worked on with Silicon Graphics back in the day, many years ago, but some great movies. Tell us briefly about that for us to get out of here.
So I worked for SGI for about 6-7 years. I started running Scotland and then became a UK director and then became the person running the workstations that did all of the graphics you saw, running the people, running both that division and the people who sold it across Europe, Africa, and Middle East. And so I met with the partners and the software vendors who were writing the software that enabled the special effects to happen in and out of places like Soho Square, which is the creative center in the UK and Europe. And the people that were working for me were selling. This is the time at which, you may remember it, the Boeing 777 was the first plane ever designed from start to finish without any modeling physical at all, any physical modeling. It was completely done virtually until it took off. And that was SGI. In Europe, the Formula One teams, Renault, Audi, Mercedes were all moving to doing this. It was incredibly exciting times. But yes, at the same time, you then had Star Wars, Terminator, Lord of the Rings. All of those were happening at that time. Fantastic time of my career. Right. I mean, you talk about being at the leading edge. Our toes were hanging over the bleeding edge to get those effects because the studios and the designers were saying, well, that was fantastic, and that was fantastic 3 months ago. We need it better now. And so there was this ramping up, better and better technology just coming all the time. So it was a fabulous time and an incredible environment. Company now subsumed into Hewlett-Packard. It did all of that, but it wasn't a giant scale company, so therefore it was always going to be a challenge to survive in the world that we know today. But I'm very proud of that. It's a company that created so many things that we think of as standard now. The virtual studios on election night, the virtual studio setups, virtualized cubes, which are quite freaky, where every surface is glass.
Right.
The oil companies use when they're trying to figure out how to drill into the oil wells they found. All of those things and a ton of stuff around space travel, a ton of stuff around car design, plane design, etc. All of that happened over that period. Yeah, wonderful.
Right. And for all the youngsters listening, because I know there's a lot of authors younger than we are, SGI was Silicon Graphics, which were these huge workstation computers, and it was a company that was much, much better computers than what you could buy for the home at the time.
Yes.
They were
in those days, well, The thing that we used to say when we were doing presentations was that for the last decade, every film longlisted and shortlisted for special effects at the Oscars, every film used Silicon Graphics. So it's when you say that, you go, right, this was this whole industry. Oh, by the way, Toy Story, all of that stuff, that could only happen because the technology was there. These were not PCs. Yep. Now, technology's caught up and that world has changed. But at the time, PCs had no capability to do that. Right. And it was workstations and Silicon Graphics was the top of the mountain controlling everything that happened there. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, we changed the way that people go to the movies and the way that people get their cars, the way that the way that the planes they fly in are designed, all of that. So
that's pretty cool.
Wonderful things.
Well, you know, not to get your wife to fly to America and come after me or get you in trouble, but man, it really sounds like a fourth book with a memoir of your career might be something to think about.
No. We have to whisper that one.
Oh, okay. How about you talk to me, I'll write it, I'll ghostwrite it for you, and then we'll put it out that way.
Oh, that sounds like a great idea. Yes.
I can't see the whole room for all.
Yep. And right until the last minute, plausible deniability.
Right, yeah. Just as long as your wife's not hiding somewhere I can't see and listening. and if she is, I live in Alaska.
Good enough.
Yeah, all right, man. Well, hey, it was great chatting with you. I wish you luck on the books, and we'll try and catch up again sometime.
Absolutely. Listen, great to speak to you. I've really enjoyed it. So thank you again for the opportunity to ramble on about all manner of things.
Nice. Great. Thanks, Jim.
Right. Thank you very much. Take care.
Thank you for listening to Discovered Wordsmiths. Come back next week and listen to another author discuss the road they've traveled, and maybe sometime in the near future, it might be you.